Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, and I hope that our producer extraordinaire, Nikki Starr, is with us again today. Nikki, are you here?
Yes, I am.
I'm so happy that you're here. How are you surviving Super Tuesday?
You know, all I'm doing is watching the news and talking politics. I got to take a break for some movies.
Oh, and I think that's a very wise thing to do. Well, I'm feeling super today because our special guest is Karen Sharp Kramer. She's the widow of the legendary filmmaker Stanley Kramer, who was responsible for such great films as Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, The Wild One, and so many others. Now, Nikki, Karen has quite a fascinating background of her own. She's been a cover girl, a model, a producer, an actress. In fact, she won a Golden Globe for her performance in The High and the Mighty. And for our purposes today, the most important thing is she served as her husband's filmmaking associate behind the camera on so many of his films. The Stanley Kramer Collection is being released on DVD this month. I believe that's February 12th. So Karen has agreed to talk with us about that DVD as well as about her husband's remarkable career. Hi, Karen. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters.
Well, Betty Jo, thank you so much for that introduction, and you're hired.
I am hired.
You did a great job. And yes, I haven't voted yet, but as soon as your show is over, I'm going out to vote, and I want to remind all your listeners, don't forget to vote. This is Super Tuesday, and I'm just thrilled. What a fascinating time we're living in right now.
We really are. It's a historical election that we're going to be having, and it's very thrilling and very exciting.
I think everybody's invested, more vested this time than ever before in the history of this country.
I think you're right about that, Karen. And I wanted to tell our listeners that we also have on the show today Marilyn Forstadt, who's a good friend of mine, but I haven't seen her for many, many, many months. Marilyn is an author. She's also an editor, and she works with Diana Sanger on her wonderful classic movie guide website. And so, Karen, of course, your husband's movies are definitely classics, and it's no wonder that classic movie guide people want to ask questions or comment about them. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Betty Jo. It's good to talk to you after all this time.
I know, and I'm just so glad that you could be with us today. Well,
thank you.
It's such an honor to have both of you on our show, but I'd like to begin, Karen, to talk a little bit about the DVD, by the way, which I watched, and I'm just absolutely fascinated with it and so happy that you put that together and that the movie fans are going to be able to see these wonderful films. Why don't you tell our listeners which Stanley Kramer films are included?
Well, first of all, thank you, Betty Jo, and hi, Marilyn. I'm glad to meet you on the show. Well, I tell you, the Stanley Kramer film collection consists of course, the 40th anniversary, which we're celebrating, of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. What a perfect time to release that film.
For
With
sure.
Obama running for president, or hopefully, we don't know yet. But
well, it could be Obama
but
coming
could be
to the White
Hillary
House.
Clinton, who I'm very fond of as well, but or whoever. But also included in that anniversary DVD special edition is Ship of Fools, which I think is a wonderful film, and I was thrilled to be able to bring a lot of interesting people to that. The Wild One, of course, was part of our history of this country. Actually, it was based on a true incident that happened up in Northern California in 1947 with a motorcyclist, capturing that little town of Hollister. And then when they had enough of ransacking the town, they ride off into the sunset. That was really truly happened in our country. So that's on that DVD collection, as well as Member of the Wedding, which was taken from the Broadway play and introduced Julie Harris and Ethel Waters and Brandon DeWilde for the first time to the moviegoers. And then, of course, a film that I'm extremely fond of called The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T. It was the first Dr. Seuss movie ever made, musical, which I think is a cult classic, and not very many people know about it now, but they will, hopefully, when the box set comes out on February the 12th.
I was so surprised that that film was included because, Karen, I forgot about it.
I know, most people did, and I really thought of The Caine Mutiny or Death of a Salesman. I wanted to include those or the four poster. I thought about many of the films that are Blessed to Be Sin Children. They're all for Columbia films. But I thought, well, this kind of shows a diversification of Stanley's work. And it was, after all, the first Dr. Seuss movie. It was a really experiment. It was a children's opera, actually. And I thought it would be an interesting, special kind of something different that was not so serious.
Well, it had some singing and dancing in it.
So no, it did.
As the world's most avid movie musical fan, I appreciated that very much.
And Technicolor, we forget how beautiful films looked at that time. It was Technicolor.
Yes.
They're extraordinary, and the costumes and all of the set decorations. I thought it was a very big plus, actually, in the box set.
Well,
I'm very pleased with it.
Dr. Seuss did the lyrics to the songs, too. Wasn't that correct?
Yes, that's true, and Frederick Hollander wrote it as a children's opera. And I have Michael Feinstein guesting on that particular section of the box set because he's so knowledgeable about music. And he called me through the years, can I sing that song? Can I sing that song from that particular movie? And I would say, well, of course you can sing it. Anyway, so I had him guest on it. He does a fantastically thorough job of explaining the music that took place in that film. So
yes, that's very helpful. The features just make it really so special. But of course, we know that Stanley Kramer mostly focused on socially conscious films.
Yes.
And of course, his most famous one, I think, is the one that you're celebrating the 40th year anniversary for, and that's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. What do you think drew your husband to focus on these kinds of themes?
Films. Well, I think because Stanley was really born in Hell's Kitchen, New York, which was, of course, the time he was born was not the place to be raised by a single working mother. But I think that the Roosevelt era really formed his values. When Marian Anderson was not allowed to sing the national anthem for the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Right.
And Eleanor Roosevelt resigned from that organization and said, as long as I'm First Lady, she's going to be allowed to sing. I think that made a deep impression on Stanley, a young Stanley Kramer. And he became friendly, very friendly with Eleanor Roosevelt. He wrote her a fan letter, and she wrote him back. And that started a major mentorship. And I think because of that, I think he started, fighting for the equal rights of the African American way early in 1948 with Home of the Brave. And then, of course, he went on to make The Defiant Ones and, of course, Pressure Point with all those two films with Sidney Poitier. And then, of course, in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner in 1967. When we made Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, interracial marriage was against the law in 16 states in this country. Anyone who was married into a different race had a choice. They could either go to prison for 5 years or leave the state for good. Now, that bill was up in front of the Congress for change, but it hadn't been completely decided. And with the popularity of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, that was overturned. And now, that law was changed. And so I'm very proud of that.
It was a movie that mattered.
Did matter. Everybody likes to say they made a landmark film, and most of the time they're not landmark, but they say it anyway. But this actually did change the history of our country.
Well,
and
I think
that's why we're celebrating that today.
Oh, great to celebrate. And I think Marilyn might have a question for you regarding that particular film. Marilyn?
Yes, I do. Karen, I was wondering, you commented briefly in your introduction about comparing the film to today's culture. I wonder if you care to elaborate on that, comparing the film to today's culture and politics. And also, did your husband realize when he was making the film how significant it would ultimately be?
No. First of all, he didn't realize that. He believed in it very much so, or he wouldn't have made the film. Because when we, first of all, when we made the film, and when Columbia found out we were actually making a film about that subject matter, the filming stopped.
Oh, wow.
And we were shooting in San Francisco, the exteriors. And Stanley had kind of danced away from telling them or giving them a screenplay because he knew that he might have problems. He kept telling them it's a love story. Well, it is a love story. And it stars Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy and Sidney Poitier. It's going to be great. So he kept tap dancing out of it. But finally, when they were making it, he had to give them the screenplay. And production stopped, and they used the fact that Spencer Tracy was ill, and he was, and that they couldn't insure him. Well, Stanley knew that was not the reason for why they were stopping the film, although that was true. Spencer was not well. But Stanley had made three films before with Spencer, starting with Inherit the Wind and Judgment at Nuremberg and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. So he knew he could work with Tracy. He knew he could protect that. So he had an idea, and he and I went up to see Kate Hepburn, and he said, look at Kate, we know this is not the reason they've halted this film. You and I know why. But I'm willing to give up my salary to put up collateral. Will you do the same? And she said, Stanley, are you serious? He said, yes, I'm serious. She said, then I will too. So then the studio had no other reason but to let it go ahead and finish the film. They were so frightened, and they had every right to be. You know, this was against the law in 16 states. So they had every right to have real definite qualms about this film being released. They released it in one little theater here in Westwood, California, where it's a dead theater. Nobody ever went to that theater. So they released it very quietly. And the minute the doors opened, and I'll never understand why, but I'm so eternally grateful, there were lines around the block. I don't mean two blocks long. I mean 15 blocks long. And they just never stopped coming. And to this day, guess who's coming to dinner still remains one of the top money grocers in the history of Columbia Pictures. Now, to answer your other question, it was against the law, and our lives were threatened because we made it. People would come up to us at dinner parties, in restaurants. We'd have midnight phone calls, letters of hate, because people objected to it. And I don't mean just the white race. The African-American race was not terribly happy either about this whole idea. But yet they never stopped coming to see the movie. Okay, so now we look at today. Now, I thought we'd come a great distance, and I think we have an interracial marriage. We've come a long way since that time. There's many interracial marriages. People don't point fingers at these people anymore and shun them as much as they did in 1967. But if you look at Hurricane Katrina and the embarrassment of that for this country, and you look at the racial slurs that have been being made constantly, I think, well, have we come? How far have we actually come? But now we look at Obama and we think, well, wait a minute here. Here we've come pretty far because we couldn't have dreamed about this 40 years ago or before, or even Hillary Clinton, a woman in the White House. There's so much social change happening now, and we're certainly going to find out where we stand with that. But I think we can never stop healing, never stop forging ahead and reminding people that we all have equality in this world, no matter what culture you come from. It shouldn't be, oh, that's the black man sitting over the corner, that's who that man is, or that's the Chinese person. It should not be there. That's that man and that's that woman. We should all celebrate the fact that we're different, that we're all the same. That's
my
feelings.
Thank you. Very well said. Yeah.
What a terrific answer, and what a thing to live through as being part of that film. And then to see the great success with the nominations that it got for Oscars.
Yes.
And Karen, I looked at this film again a couple of nights ago. It holds up.
Doesn't it? I think it does, too. In fact, I feel that Stanley's films, if you study his work, and he certainly made a lot of great films, I think, because I feel that because I'm personally involved with him, but I really do believe that he did. And if you look at his films, they're all timeless. If you look at On the Beach, which talks about world nuclear war that could destroy us all, I mean, that's very timely. You look at a little film called like The Sniper about this man who got up on rooftops and just killed people at random with no motivation, really. this subject, Mary, Inherit the Wind, about the right to teach Darwinism and religion, it's not that it versus each other, it's the freedom of speech that picture was about. It was the right to explore all possibilities. I mean, all the things that he made, even down to killing animals needlessly in the little film called Bless the Beasts and Children, they're timeless. And I think that's the quality of why we celebrate Stanley Kramer today.
Well, Marilyn got us started on the right track here with that that wonderful question. And I noticed in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, when you mentioned Eleanor Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
I noticed in that film there was a huge picture of Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Right out of our office. Stanley put a lot of our paintings are hanging on the wall there. And all of the things in Spencer Tracy's office were Stanley's things from his office. And that happens so often in films when you personalize things. And, of course, as a filmmaker, you can't help yourself. Because when you're working on a film like this, it's how you vision your world and what you want to say. And you personalize these things by bringing a lot of your mementos from home, which is what Stanley did. How wonderful that you noticed that.
Oh, it was.
Well, of course, Stanley was a Democrat, you know.
That's
first
right.
And foremost, he was that. And he never was afraid to say so either.
Well, I am just so starry-eyed, you know, to get a chance to talk with you, somebody that has had all of the experiences you've had with the movies and to work with the greats, like Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy. How were they to work with?
Well, they were wonderful. We spent many nights at dinner with them in their home. They weren't very social, neither were Stanley and I, for that matter. We didn't like to go out a lot. We would go to each other's homes and spend time together. He was very, very sweet. He was very supportive of Stanley and me, and he particularly, of course, adored Kate. Now, Kate was very feminine, not at all what you would think, because that was not her image on screen.
Right.
You know? She was extremely feminine, waited on him hand and foot, made the dinner herself, would not allow anybody to come in and cook for them. We had the same dinner every time we went over there, but I loved it. It was always good, always ended with vanilla ice cream with a lot of chocolate sauce over it, hot chocolate fudge sauce over it with nuts on top. She loved chocolate. She was addicted to chocolate. She was also fascinated with Picasso's Mistress, and she had all the books that the Mistress had written, and she said, this is how you had to treat your man, this is how you had to treat Stanley, this is what we have to do for these men. She was very subservient to Spence.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing and extremely feminine. So, you know, people are not always what they seem. That's an image they portray beautifully on the screen, and sometimes they're very much the opposite of that image.
Betty Jo, that very much surprises me.
Yeah. It is surprising to a lot of people.
I love that.
Yes, I do
Nikki,
too.
Right? Nikki?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, it is. I've been muted, but I had to interject that. Yeah. That is one of the most enduring stories I've ever heard. I would have never guessed.
I know, and we're definite fans of Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, I know,
too.
I was too, and I will continue to always be. She happens to be my daughter's godmother,
Wow. And
our first child together, Stanley and I, and the very very day my daughter was born, Katharine Hepburn sent her very own christening dress that she was christened in. And she says, oh, dear, you're going to be forever telling them, spell it with an A. They never, to this day, spell Katharine Hepburn's name correctly. It's usually with an E, and it's K-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E.
Well,
that's
Marilyn,
her niece, Katharine Houghton, and
yeah.
That's my daughter, Katharine Kramer, spell their name.
Well, Marilyn and I know about that because how many times have we turned in reviews, Marianne, where we've spelled
right.
It K-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E, and then the editor will change it to the
E.
So, right, Marilyn?
Well, Kate, Aunt Kate, which is, of course, she's known as being Kate, never referred to herself that way. She referred to herself as Kat, K-A-T.
Oh.
That's inside. That's the way she referred. Never Kathy, never Katie, never. She was Kat. My daughter calls herself Kat as well because they can't spell Katharine right, and it irritates my daughter, as I'm sure it did Katharine Hepburn. And so she is Kat as well. I said, now you have trouble because now they're going to spell it with a C. So I said, so you know you can't win with that name. But anyway, it's a proud name to carry.
It certainly is. Well, maybe we better get back to the DVD that's going to be released on the 12th of this month. Would you have had some other films in that? I think you did mention some when we were talking before.
The Caine Mutiny.
Right.
I would love to do Volume 2 if they'll let me.
Yeah.
I chose these films, but there was Death of a Salesman I would like to have added. You know, the four-poster, all about marriage with Lily Tomlin and Rex Harrison, is a wonderful film. The Sniper, I would like to have.
Well, you were in The Sniper.
Yes, if you blink, you miss me. It was my first film. I was like 15 years old, sitting on a drugstore stool. I think I have a line or two. But if you miss, you could miss me with Arthur Franz when he makes a phone call. He was the star of the movie. And it was for Stanley Kramer. I didn't realize that until much later in life. I never met Stanley during that time. I met Stanley on Ship of Fools when I was working opposite Jerry Lewis in The Disorderly Orderly, and he was doing Ship of Fools right across the soundstage from ours. And Vivian Leigh was my favorite actress, and of course I wandered onto that set just to take a look at Vivian Leigh, and that's where Stanley first saw me.
Well,
it took him a year to get a date. But when I got a date, I kept saying, I don't date these people in the industry. You know, I don't want to get involved with any of these people.
Famous last words.
It took him a year, but once we did, our first date, which was a disaster because I kept looking at my clock saying, I got to go, I'm working tomorrow, and I never date. It was a disastrous first date. But he kept pursuing me, and we were married 9 months later. And I never look back. So I was very lucky to be married to him for 35 years. It was a great marriage, and I learned so much from him just by osmosis. He didn't teach me. I just learned by example. He was a special man, and every night at 6 o'clock, he would walk through that door. He didn't care what movie he was on. He never missed dinner with his family, turned off the switch about the work, and was totally with us. From homework on.
So how lucky
was I?
Absolutely. Well, and I'm sure vice versa too. Well, what types of things did you do to help Stanley with the films?
Well, I was with him when he and Bill Rose wrote the screenplay. You know, Stanley was a writer before he ever became, and also an editor, I might add, for 13 years before he ever became an associate producer, then a producer, then a producer-director. So he was an auteur from the word go. But he was a great writer. And we went and lived at Bill's house, Bill Rose and his wife Tanya's house, when they wrote the screenplay. And so I know, you know, firsthand, not to take anything away from Bill and Tanya because they were great, but Stanley was a big part of that screenplay. And we discussed it every night and came to casting. He didn't want Katherine Houghton. He had his eye on a couple of the people that were much hotter young actresses. Mm-hmm. One was Samantha Egger,
yes,
and the other was Mariette Hartley.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they're totally wrong. And I said, no. Right now, I'm telling you, he said, you've never even met Katherine Houghton because she lives in New York. I said, I don't even know if she can act. I can tell you one thing. It's right. Do it. And I said, it's family. It's the right person for the right job. And I said, I want you to do it. And he did.
Well,
and there were scenes in the movie that I thought were wrong. And I said, you just can't have Sidney Poitier say that. You know, at the time when he tells the family that if they don't approve of the marriage, he'll quietly go away.
Yes.
Well, when he knows they're not going to approve, he approaches Spencer Tracy and said, how dare you? I'm going to marry her anyway. I said, oh, no, you're not going to do that.
Oh, good for you.
Because we got to love Sidney Poitier. We got to pull for him. And if that scene is in there, I said, the audiences are not going to accept him.
Well,
as
good
the
for
ideal. So, you know, we changed those things. And
well, you'd had some influence that really made a difference.
Wives do. Wives, believe me, particularly in the beginning of your marriage, are very influential. I got to tell you. We rule.
We do.
And so I knew I was, at least I felt I was right. And so on every film that we did, I was very heavily involved in everything things Stanley did. I didn't always take credit because I didn't think that was the right thing to do for the marriage. So I just was there.
Well, there's no amount of good there's no limit to the amount of good you can do if you don't care who gets the credit. And congratulations to you for the things you've done with these films. Nikki, I'm so sorry. I think we're just running out of time and we didn't get a chance to find out if there are some things in the chat room that we might cover. Have we covered everything pretty much, Nikki?
Just the main thing in the chat was the admiration for their relationship and the respect that they had for each other.
Oh, Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn?
No, you and Stanley.
Oh, so, well, we're very much like that, too. I mean, Stanley and I had a great marriage, and I think it reflects in all of his work, actually. I was just very lucky. I got a great man. I don't know that there are that many out there. I like to hope that there are for my daughters, but it's a hard act to follow.
Well, I just appreciate so much how candid you've been with us today, Karen, and we have so many, many more questions.
Well, let's do it again.
Well, I think we should, Nikki. I think we should try to.
I have one suggestion, if you don't mind.
Yes.
A box set every year for maybe 14 years. We'll cover it all.
How about From Your Lips to God's Ears at the Sony's while we're at it?
All right.
I want to do volume two. And then there's even better years at UA, United Artists and MGM.
Well,
I like those years almost as well, if not better.
Well, we certainly will send good vibes about having that happen, and I feel like such a party pooper here, but I have to kind of wrap this up. But I want to thank you, Karen, for being such a wonderful guest.
And, well, thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
You've just been a real treat, and Marilyn, thanks so much for calling me.
Marilyn, glad to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I was delighted to have the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you both,
thank you.
God bless all of you.
Thank you. You too.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to all the folks at Blog Talk Radio for their support and connection with this show. Special thanks again to Karen Kramer for her wonderful interview, and to Nikki Starr, of course, for everything she does to make this show possible. Thanks to everyone who listened live or to the archives or participated in the chat. Please come back next time when our guest will be Margaret Avery, who received the Oscar nomination for her stunning performance in The Color Purple. In the meantime, check out our movie reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. And remember, dear listeners, protect yourself against identity theft by visiting lifelock.com. That's LIFELOCK.com. Check out the important services offered there. But don't forget to use our special code and receive a 10% discount if you sign up with LifeLock. Our code is REALTALK, R-E-E-L-T-A-L-K, and it's all one word. Now, as usual, here's A.J. Daniels to close the show with a song Nikki and I dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.
Stay with me and be true. how much I love you. Then you'd be forced to love me too. If you knew how much I adore you, you'd stay with me and be true.